Well, it's a new year full of plenty of new opportunities. And right along with those, there are also some common obstacles that can get in the way of making real productive progress. That's where we're headed today on the Unhurried Living Podcast. Well, happy first podcast of 2019. Our family had a fairly quiet holiday after a very full fall.
Yeah, it was nice to gear down just a bit for the holidays, but it was the first time that we were all not together. We had one son that was in London for Christmas, so we had the experience of after 26 years not having all five of us.
Yeah.
And then the day after Christmas, another son took off for Tokyo. Just for fun. So they've been seeing the world and we've been staying at home, which has been really nice.
It has been good.
So just before the holidays, it felt really good to get a second draft of our next book project back to our editor. And again, our new book that's coming out is called What Does Your Soul Love? And we cannot wait for you to read it later this fall.
So in this episode, we're talking about four common barriers to leadership effectiveness. Now, these aren't the only four barriers to leading well, but they are four big ones, at least for me. And these insights, by the way, they're not just for people with very visible leadership roles or positions. As we've said before, we see leadership as a much larger category than that. Leadership is about holy and fruitful initiative in my life as well as in my work. So I mentioned the four barriers we're going to talk about today in my book, An Unhurried Leader. So what I'd like to do is read a short passage from the chapter titled Unhurrying Our Thoughts. In this passage, I'm talking about the classic practice of noticing our thoughts. I'm actually reading from page 138. For example, I've discovered a few negative thoughts that surface just about every time I do this exercise. They are thoughts of anxiety or fear, self-doubt, or insecurity. I've done this exercise enough to know that such thoughts are internal enemies that many of us are far too familiar with. These thoughts have sometimes felt so strong that I imagined them like the ringwraiths riding their black demon horses in The Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, we've actually joked about this and we've called them the four horsemen sometimes, haven't we?
That's true.
So the four common barriers you mentioned in that passage are thoughts of anxiety, fear, self-doubt, and insecurity. I know these have been very real dynamics for you for a while, but I think we can all identify with most or all of these as well. I've experienced all of these over the course of my life and they still pop up for me currently. And so in talking about these barriers, we thought we'd use the following framing questions for each one. So the first question we're going to ask and answer is, what does this barrier look like in my life and in my work? And then how does it hinder my progress? And then finally, what does it look like when I overcome or move through it? What is the alternative movement to each one? And then Alan will also share a few other ideas from An Unhurried Leader that help address these four barriers further.
Right. So let's start with the barrier of anxiety. And so first, what does anxiety look like in life and in work? And for me, one of the simplest ways to put it is anxiety for me is what if? What if I bomb in that speaking engagement I'm heading for? What if I don't have what I need to write this book I've agreed to write? You know, what if, what if, what if? It's really the opposite of David's simple prayer. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. I mean, in the language of what ifs, what I want to say is, the Lord is my shepherd, there is no what if that's bigger than or beyond him.
Yeah, so for me, anxiety becomes more like an unwelcome engine. I run on it for a while, and then I run out of gas in a big way, and it feels like ka-chunk.
Yeah.
I am done. And then I wake up to what I'm doing and I realize that I need to reconnect with my own soul and with the ways that God would have me do my work. And now I've noticed over time that the space between these is shrinking, which is good. And I catch myself faster and I'm realigning a bit quicker.
Yeah. So that's what anxiety looks like. Now, how is it that anxiety hinders us? Yeah. And so for me, What I realize is back in my 20s and in my 30s, I almost imagined that anxiety was like an asset. It was a benefit. It was a positive. I felt like it got me moving. It kept me moving. And it drove me to big achievements. And there was an element of truth to that. I did get moving. I did keep moving. And I did achieve a lot driven by anxiety. But if anxiety is fuel, you know, as you mentioned, it's fuel that burns dirty. It had a way, and it still does, of fouling my soul, my relationships, even my physical health. It is not a sustainable way to live. And it is certainly not a way to work in cooperation with a prince of peace. He's not the prince of anxiety. He's a prince of peace. And so I've often quoted something Dallas said once. He said, you know, anything you could do in anxiety, you could do a whole lot better in peace.
Is that the truth? Well, then, well, what does it look like when you are overcoming or moving through your anxiety? And are there any alternative movements that you found?
Well, you know, in An Unhurried Leader, I described what it is that an unhurried leader actually looks like. And one of my descriptions read like this. Rather than allowing anxiety to drive them, unhurried leaders learn to depend on a reliable God who invites them to join a good kingdom work already well underway. That, you know, that's the movement of trust. Mm-hmm. So the alternative to anxiety is learning to rely on a faithful and very present God. My anxiety is an attempt to play God, to try to replace God as the sovereign over my own life. And, you know, it's just a great burden that God never meant me to bear.
Right. Well, let's now that we've looked at anxiety, mm-hmm. why don't we move on to fear and ask this question first. What does it look like in life and work?
Yeah, I think fear for me often looks like intimidation. By that, I mean I feel intimidated by what looks at first glance like a daunting task. I'm intimidated by the appearances of some, you know, something that's coming up in my schedule or some conversation I'm going to have with another person. Or I'm intimidated at the start of a huge writing project. So fear for me is when I allow some intimidating prospect to fill my thoughts, to fill my perspective, to fill my assumptions.
Now, when it comes to fear for me, I have to go on a search for what am I actually afraid of? If anxiety is an engine, then fear for me is like putting blinders on. My vision gets constricted. It makes my world small. And all I can think is how things are not going to go well. The thing I'm afraid of looms large, and it just consumes my vision. So our second question on fear, Alan, then, is how does fear hinder you?
Well, I think fear has a way of hindering me when I allow the message of fear to become reality in my mind, my heart, and my will. When I believe the voice of fear rather than trusting the encouraging voice of my Father in heaven, it prevents me from stepping into what God is inviting me into. What I've discovered is that fear is a kind of negative anticipation. I look into the future and I see dire possibilities. And then I see dire likelihoods. And then eventually I imagine dire certainties, right?
I feel you. Oh, yeah. So what does it look like then when you overcome or move through fear? What is an alternative movement to fear?
Yeah, I think of what one of my spiritual directors said to me in the past. He said, fear is nearly always a doorway into something good God is inviting you into. So overcoming fear has often involved leaning into it and discovering that instead of a thick brick wall or an insurmountable barrier, actually, fear was a doorway to step through. Fear, in fact, was what kept me from writing my first book for years. And in the course of some counseling that I did, I found courage to lean into those fears and to begin to explore the possibilities of finding a publisher interested in what would eventually become the book, An Unhurried Life. So in all of that, one of the things I've been learning to do is I'm learning to practice anticipatory consolation. And by that, I mean that instead of looking to the future and seeing dire possibilities and probabilities and almost certainties, instead of that, I begin to look into the future and see that, well, I'm not going to be alone. I'll have everything I need. I can be confident that the goodness and the graciousness of God will follow me as I go. That's what I mean by anticipatory consolation.
Yeah, I've been trying to practice that as well, looking, although I have to admit, sometimes it is easier for me to be a little more positive, but when fear's running it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I mentioned that fear is like putting blinders on. So when I'm overcoming fear, I'm able to take those blinders off and then get a more expansive view. I get up on my metaphorical mountaintop and I remember what is true and what is real. I remember that God is with me in whatever the fearful situation is and that I actually do have everything I need to make my way through. Fear does not get to be the boss of me and it does not get to have the last word.
Right. So we've talked about anxiety. We've talked about fear. We're going to talk about the last two together, and those are self-doubt and insecurity. So the first question becomes this: what does self-doubt and insecurity look like in our life, in our work? And for me, what this looks like is a strong sense of me feeling like I'm not up to the challenge. It comes with thoughts like, who am I to take on this challenge? Or who am I to speak to this group? Or so on.
Yeah, I think mine's similar. Self-doubt and insecurity are about forgetting who I truly am. It's also focusing too much on myself. It's easy to move to these two dynamics when I think it's all up to me and it's all about me. So the second question then is, how does self-doubt and insecurity hinder you?
Yeah, I think self-doubt and insecurity, when I let them get large in my thinking, keep me from trying something new or from taking risks. Self-doubt and insecurity have a way of paralyzing me. I compare myself unfavorably with others. I assume that most other leaders have a lot less struggles than I do. But in fact, just kind of stepping behind that thought, in my work with high-level leaders, I've learned that, and this is no surprise, that every leader is human. Every single leader is human. And every leader at every level of responsibility and position has very real human weaknesses and challenges. That's just a fact.
Well, then what does it look like when you overcome or move through self-doubt and insecurity? What are the alternative movements?
Yeah, so I think the main thing for me has been not to focus on the doubt part of self-doubt, but on the self-hyphenated part. The main issue for me has been to realize that self-doubt and insecurity just can't be solved directly or head-on. No matter what you say to self-doubt and insecurity, it'll always want a little more. So I think of the story of Moses when God chooses him to go and deliver God's people from their captivity in Egypt. Moses' first response, if you remember, was, you know, something like this: "You've got the wrong guy. I am not up to that task. I don't know how to do that. No one's going to listen to me anyway." So how does God respond to Moses' insecurity and self-doubt? You know, does he say, "Oh, Moses, you're a gifted guy. You have so much talent. You're going to do great." God doesn't focus on Moses' capability. God doesn't answer his self-doubts or his insecurities directly. Instead, his answer is pretty simple. He says, "I will be with you." So instead of talking about Moses' abilities and his capabilities, God says, "I am going with you. You will not be alone when you speak to Pharaoh. You will not be alone when you speak to my people. You will never be alone. I will be with you."
Self-doubt and insecurity get put into place for me when I get right-sized. I see that God is present, that he cares more about what is going on than I do, and that he is the one who can actually do something about it. There's a kind of a holy letting go that helps me take my eyes off myself. I still come prepared to do what it is I want to do, but my focus can shift to withness and presence. For example, I actually do care about the people I might be speaking to, and that trumps my need for security.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, we've talked about four common barriers to leadership effectiveness, namely anxiety, fear, and then self-doubt and insecurity. And I wonder, as you're listening to this, whether or not one or more of these feel familiar to you as well. And if so, have you assumed that you were unique in that experience, or that you were the only one who sometimes or even often feels this way? Let me just say this. You are not. You're not alone. You're not unique. These really are common barriers that many, many leaders experience.
Yeah, it's important for us to know that we're not alone. So as you think about these common barriers, we're going to leave you with three questions here. And the first one is this. What would it look like to experience the faithful presence of God in the midst of your anxieties? And number two, what would it look like to lean into your fears rather than avoiding them, being paralyzed by them, or wrestling unproductively with them? And number three, what would it look like to let God fill your vision and perspective rather than letting self-doubt and insecurity overwhelm it? And we encourage you to spend some time with these questions and see where they might lead you.
Right. So, of course, it's our hope that this podcast has been helpful. You know, we're just sharing insights and experiences here that have been important in our own growth in faith and in leadership. So if this podcast is helping, would you consider partnering with us to help us continue to provide these biweekly episodes? You can do so through our partnership with Patreon.com. Unhurried Living is a nonprofit, which means that a significant part of our funding comes through generous financial partners. Patreon makes it possible for you to help us continue to produce quality episodes on themes related to following Jesus' unhurried way of life and leadership. If you'd like to be a monthly partner in this way, all you have to do is visit patreon.com/unhurriedliving to find out more and to join our growing partner community. Depending on your monthly giving level, you'll have access to our patron-only feed, to talking notes for each episode, and a high-quality leadership training video we recently recorded, and more.
So thanks for considering partnership with us. You can help us continue to make this podcast available. And as always, we love connecting with more and more friends like you who want to rest deeper, live fuller, and lead better.